Ladies and gentlemen, it's a pleasure for me to be here, and thanks to Cordia for inviting me. I'm going to talk for the next half hour about third generation e-commerce the way I see it. Now, this is certainly not a talk which takes you through Incordia's current software, but it's more an inspirational talk where I show you some of the things which I see coming in the third generation, maybe in the fourth, fifth, sixth. Okay. Let's go back, because to understand the past is often a good start for making predictions about the future. Let's go back to the 70s and 80s. What was the role computers played then in e-commerce? Well, experts, about 10 million of them, learned a language, COBOL, the computer understood. All they could do was digitize the back office, and there was almost no interaction between them and the front office, let alone between them and the customers. 1980s was characterized by the front office getting access to the back office by being able to poke at stuff, usually in very simple interfaces, nothing compared to what we have now. They learned some specific queries. Those of you who know a little bit of the airline business know that that hasn't changed all that much, to remember those keystroke sequences. And that allowed them to figure out stuff, very specific things, from what might be in those boxes back in the back office. And if you want to put a number to it, maybe it's about 100 million people. The 90s, the difference was twofold. One, we didn't have just 100 million people, but basically we had pretty much a billion people being able to poke at stuff. But poking at stuff meant that you didn't have to remember complicated keystroke sequences anymore. But what it meant was you could just write stuff in a simple interface, one line, the search box. Now, what was interesting was that not only did customers poke into stuff, but customers were willing to actually make their own stuff available. I started a company in 1999 called Mood Logic, where after 2.5 years, we had 1 billion explicit ratings of dimensions of songs. A company that subsequently was sold to All Media Guide, which just last week in turn was sold to Macrovision in San Jose. So that's all, ladies and gentlemen, the last century, or if you will, the last millennium. What's happening now? It's still about 1 billion people poking at stuff, but more importantly than that, it's about 100 million people actually producing stuff. So if you're looking at the interactions, it's actually 1 billion times 100 million. So that's a big number. That is the potential interactions we have right now. What's the future? So first of all, the future will be everybody being involved. And not necessarily only through computers, but, and we are in Scandinavia here after all, for sure, a lot of people via mobile phones. As you know, I teach in China. Actually, I've been teaching in China since 1993. And there in China is more than 500 million mobile phones, while there are only about 100 million computers. So China pretty much leapfrogged that age of pure e-commerce and right away jumped to having integration between a mobile platform and a computer platform. People, not pages, that's the future. You might be used to measuring page impressions, but what is a page? In a page where you have rich JavaScript, Ajax, and all kinds of stuff which is happening in the background, the person might not need another page view to get all the information he or she wanted. And equally well, if you think about MySpace, or if you think about Facebook, the person might, just for a little post in the wall, have another page view where just somebody says, yeah, that's cool. So in one case, for an airline for instance, you might have the whole entire timetable between two cities downloaded, including the current pricing. And that's one page view, although you're spending 10 minutes figuring out which flight you want to take. In the other case, you might have actually just almost incrementally new information in addition to what you had before. Predictive behavioral targeting is one step towards people, not pages. In the pages world, you tend to have behavioral targeting, which is based on the content or the context of the page. Google's AdSense is an example of targeting, which is based on what's on the page. There's a company out of Berlin called Nugget, N-U-G-G.A-D, which does predictive behavior targeting, which predicts based on what you've done in the past and predicts on based on surveys, which they did with you, what you're interested in. So it puts the future into what they're showing to you, not the past. Amazon shows you recommendations based on your past behavior. Nugget shows you recommendations based on the stated intentions you have. That can be very powerful. For instance, following experiment was done. Two groups of people, each of them were asked 10 questions. The first group had 9 questions, and one of the questions was, if you were to buy a car, what car would you buy? And the second group had 10 questions, no car question in the second group. Half a year later, they checked, did that car question have any impact on people actually buying cars? And turned out, yes, significantly more people bought cars in the first group where people were asked to think about, to reflect upon, what car would I buy if I was to buy a car? So the upshot of this is people don't know actually what their preferences really are. But by interacting with them, by communicating with them, by asking them questions, you can actually influence what they think about the world and you can influence their purchasing behavior. This very important field called behavior economics, and I would love to tell you many, many more stories from that field, is actually the reason why 5 years ago, Danny Kahneman went to Stockholm to pick up his Nobel Prize, which was not about how people ought to make decision economics, but about how people actually did make decisions and do make decisions in economics. Another element here, people, not pages, is how do recommendations change? And I like to use that sometimes the word social filtering as opposed to content filtering or social recommendations. Social recommendations means that, well, if a couple of my friends decided to buy that new camera, that really small Sony action camera, which has a really cool GPS in it, and that gets presented to me, that, hey, Andres, those three friends of yours bought that camera. I know that they actually do a lot of work before they buy something, so I might as well profit from their time they spend in researching the product, and I'm going to buy the same camera. So that's social commerce, very different from Amazon's people bought X, also bought Y. People who also bought, what X also bought Y, takes out the individual. It's just statistical aggregation. What this does, it puts the individual back in. And based on what my friends do, given that I actually don't really have very strict clear preferences, I'm getting ideas what I might want to do myself. Furthermore, we want to present state, not just history. What do you mean by that? Here's an example of sensing state. That's a box made by Integrated Media Measurement Incorporated. Actually, the box is just a standard mobile phone. And what does it do? It listens into your living room, or maybe into your bedroom, it depends on where you are. Every 30 seconds, it records 10 seconds of what you do. Why? Well, it is, on the one hand, to show you by clear measurement what people actually are listening to, as opposed to, you know, what they say they're listening to. But more importantly, it allows you to come up with a good estimate of whether you actually should get an ad for beer, if the TV is blasting and you're just sitting there, or whether you should get maybe an ad for a dating site. So that's an example here of sensing stuff, of measuring state. Here's another one. That is a screenshot just from last week when I downloaded the latest version of the Flash player. It asks me, privacy, allow S3.AmazonAWS, standing for AmazonWebServices.com, to access your camera and microphone? Allow, remember, or do you want to deny it? I don't want to deny anything to Amazon, so I better allow it. Why? Why does Amazon want to know about my camera and my microphone? What do you think? Again, because if they understand the state I'm in, they can do a much better job in selling me stuff than if you don't know the state I'm in. And if you think that through, actually, who of you has a mobile phone? Okay. Whose mobile phone has a microphone? Whose mobile phone has a camera? Okay, so you already have boxes with you pretty much all the time, in my case, several of them, that actually could do a good job at figuring out what state I'm in. For instance, now I'm talking, you're too quiet here actually, so I'm talking too much. And it knows that I'm moving slightly, but I'm, for instance, not changing rooms, so the light conditions don't change dramatically. So maybe now is not a good time to interrupt me, because if the phone is ringing, probably it's not polite. Whereas if I'm, say, at an airport lounge, easily identified by loudspeakers where I don't understand what people are talking about, constantly talking to you, by people rustling and saying, excuse me, more announcements, more people, more announcements, more people. And that's, oh, I would be just so happy if somebody called me, because I have nothing else to do, but seeing that time delayed by 10 minutes increase every 10 minutes by 10 minutes. So in that case, a very different state, very different ads would be appropriate. Another trend in e-business is, and I put this here on this page before, saying that basically widgets, not sites. So we have seen pages disappear, now we're seeing that actually history disappears, and now we're seeing that sites disappear. What do you mean by that? This is a picture I just took last week in Germany, in Berlin. Widget verfolgt alles, überall, meaning widgets follow you everywhere. UPS.com/widget. What do they mean by that? What they mean by that is that we moved from a world where the company was in the center. And let me go over there to actually draw a picture. From the place where the company was in the center, here, company, and the customers were where the company reached out. We move from there to a world where the customer is in the center. So you might want to put a little widget of UPS, if you're in the business that you ship some stuff to people every now and then, on your page, maybe even on your desktop. Or you might actually want to put a widget on your blog, if you're like shipping stuff where people can see what else has he been shipping. So, or if you're interested in, say, mobile phones with GPS, you might put some GPS widget on your page. Or if you're an expert in, say, basket weaving, you might want to pick a widget there which talks about basket weaving. Now, the content in those widgets is changing. Like the UPS widget, which I'm showing here, the UPS widget, of course, changes its content depending where the package is. So what I mean is here, the company is the center and tries to reach out to customers. Sometimes use the word targeting. That we move to the customer being in the center and reaching out to companies. And one way of doing this is through widgets. So sometimes we call this here e-business, and we call this right here me business. Because like Copernicus, the guy who said it actually is not tough luck that humans, the world, the center of the world is the Earth, but actually the Earth goes wrong. So in some way we have the anti-Copernican move here, that Amazon thought that the customers are revolving at Amazon. That was true 10 years ago, where you could write your reviews at Amazon.com, but it has changed. That it's now really that the customer is the center. And the customer wants on his or her blog or whatever presence they have, the world to move on with them. The story about the mobile phones always being with you, it's just in part where the customer is here. The attendant could blog, can be the mobile, etc. What comes after? business and me business. Me business was the thing I talked about last year. So that's a typical thing of 2006. But it's so 2006. I mean, even Time magazine picked up that you are the person of the year. So where do we go from there? Any idea? That's E, me. If we go a bit further in the alphabet, then we could have we business. Okay? So that is characterized by lots of customers being connected in multiple market ways. And yes, every now and then, there also is a company. So it's really the network of customers which are not characterized by the properties of the individual customer, but which are characterized by the links between the customers. And the example I already gave you was social recommendations. Social recommendations meaning that three of my friends buy that cool phone with the GPS device in it, and now I too can show on my webpage through Mashup where I am and where my other two friends are. Would that be cool? Or at least where my phone is and where the friends of my two other phones are. Okay. So now let's move a little bit further into e-business here and say, where do actually people go for information? So 20 years ago, people went for the produced news. In German, we say veröffentlichte Meinung, for the published opinion. And this picture you've all seen is people just, you know, passively sitting there getting the truth or something like that towards them. That's also in the early days of e-business that people go and click on like a portal. And the portal tells them what is important. And 10 years ago, people went and used search. Search means that you already know what you're looking for. But lots of e-business not exactly knowing what you're looking for. Lots of e-business and lots of the so-called consumer surplus is stuff you don't know what you're looking for already. So sometimes you use the word serendipitously discovering stuff. That's what we had 10 years ago. Company like cleverset.com is very good in modeling state, in modeling the product in very, very holistic ways. And some person yesterday actually told me that they're using Cleverset in their company in Sweden. And given that, they're very interested in making you discover stuff you didn't think about. The company yesterday was some company which had to rate it with selling wine. And the story I heard there is that you don't want to just have similar wines, but hey, we might as well recommend some cheese to you, or some cookbook, or a whole wine cellar. So that is stuff which you don't easily get out of people bought X, also bought Y, but that's something which you typically get out of serendipity, out of understanding the state you're in. And as I said before, now discovery tends to become very much in a social way, discovery via people you're connected to. So the generation we're in, I call Generation C, standing for creation or co-creation, community, connectivity, cooperation. So there are many C words which are correct as us. And they all have in common that connectivity really is at the heart of it. Bidirectional connectivity. I'm talking about not just you connecting to something and that something not knowing anything about you. Like, for instance, GPS devices in cars are stupid. They don't give any bits upstream. If I want to know how long does it take to drive from here to Gothenburg, I don't know that many cities in Sweden, so apologies, you know, Helsingborg. Well, why run complicated models if I can just see where are the GPS devices floating between here and Gothenburg or Helsingborg, and they're saying, well, I tend to move 7% faster than these, so that's my estimated arrival time. Once you have that, there's no excuse of being late anymore, because you know exactly how the traffic is flowing. In the Bay Area, there's a company called Dash.net, D-A-S-H.net, which does precisely that. Having devices which actually talk back. Wi-Fi, if it's in the garage, I right-click on my computer, send an address to my device in my car, or when I'm on the road, it uses GPRS. Okay, talking about conversation and bits going back and forth. E-business has also clearly a component of marketing. Now, Amazon.com fired its marketing department in 2003. So when I say marketing, I do not mean the carefully crafted arias PR departments produce, the carefully crafted dances choreographed by the second Super Bowl ad show. What I mean is the new marketing, or marketing 2.0, which we sometimes call conversational marketing. There's a company in San Francisco called GetSatisfaction.com that has at its tagline, customer service is the new marketing. So think about it this way. In the old world, and I'm going back to the whiteboard here, in the old world, you would have had a PR department which carefully crafts something and sends it down to everybody. This pyramid, ladies and gentlemen, has turned upside down. How many people work at SAS, Scandinavian Airlines Systems? I don't know, 50,000, 20,000, 10,000. How many work in PR? Maybe 10. How many customers does SAS have every year? Hundreds of thousands. So rather than having those 5 or 10 people carefully craft the messages, you listen to those hundreds of thousands of people by giving them a voice. Well, actually, it's not you who gives them a voice. They have a voice. They have a voice and they express themselves. I didn't look up for SAS, but in the United States, every airline has a site called United Sucks, American Sucks, Delta Sucks, etc., or Untied.com, where people do have a voice. So now, what should be the reaction of an airline, for instance, to all those customers talking to each other and saying, forget about this, and that is broken, this is broken? Well, what choice do they have? I brought for you a very short video by Jonathan Schwartz, who is the CEO of Sun Microsystems. And he was asked by a company called Technorati. He was asked, so Jonathan, what actually are your thoughts on the control which might or might not be there? While I'm going to start this here, let me quickly ask you whether you guys have any questions so far.
How did you spell SACS, Delta
SACS? S-U-C-K-S. It's not a very, you know, complimentary term, shall we say. Yes. The way to think about it is, if you just enter, for instance, United Airlines, I'm not online here, but if anybody is, if you entered United Airlines, or if you just enter United, chances are that your second hit is the site which already is critical of United. So Google is quite good in picking up those sites. So here is Sun Microsystems CEO Jonathan Schwartz with his opinion on what do companies do in this world of conversation marketing.
It's an illusion that you're in control right now, because the reality is the market's in control. And we've all seen brands that one day are pristine and the next day are, you know, polluted. And why did that happen? I thought you were in control. I think if you're there listening and watching, you can very quickly participate in any reaction, positive or negative. And you can have an amplifying effect when you want, you can have an attenuating effect when you want. If you're not participating, then you're not really in control at all. It's just the illusion that you are.
So I think that's a deep insight. And he very, very much consequently in his company pushed this through. He has a blog. He blogs. He, more importantly, opened up the front page of his company, sun.com. He opened up the front page of his company for any blogger to participate. He actually syndicates, because in me business, people don't really go to Sun's website to tell them anything anymore. He syndicates via Technorati, an independent company, the blog entries other people have in the blogosphere. What he found is that people who initially were critical, once they see what Sun is doing, once they feel heard, and Sun says, okay, actually, you know, we didn't know this, we can do something about this, this is what we are doing about it. Wow, they say, if Sun can do this, what else can they do? And they really make a big difference, and he views it as a very positive effect to what's happening in his company.
Thank you.
So in some way, we can view this as a conversation as opposed to what I call the packaged media approach. Packaged media approach means you write once and you read many times. It's a consumption model. The conversational media approach is you write, you listen, you write again, you listen again, and so on and so forth. It is a platform which is free-flowing, conversational. So it's not about consumption. It is not about consumption, ladies and gentlemen. It's about contribution. It's about engagement. That, of course, means we need to have different measures. E-commerce has to change its measures from simple conversion rate, because the goal is not just to sell stuff to people. The goal is to actually have widgets, for instance, all over the place. So conversion in the widget world means how many widgets does one widget produce? So if I have, for instance, for a slideshow called imageloop.com, if I have an image loop widget on my page, on average, how many people say, oh, that's really cool. I want to have one too. Click on make your own and produce more widgets. I've worked with a company in Thailand called Agoda that was purchased a week ago by Priceline, 33,000 hotels in Asia mainly. And we just are developing really cool widgets there, which are not here you can book your flight or here you can book your hotel on Agoda. Nobody wants to have something uncool like that on their blog. But hey, show us not only where you have been, but show us where you want to go. And now suddenly you have the variety. If, well, I get my friends to also reveal where they want to go, then suddenly, hey, we might find out we both want to go to Burma. And now Agoda gets in business saying, hey, I can help you. If you both want to go to Burma, here's a good deal. So it's by basically expressing intention, which is a part of self-realization, saying, well, you know, I haven't traveled to Burma yet, might be nice to go there. Then this way you get in the business. But conversion in this case doesn't mean how many tickets do you sell or per each dollar you pay to Google, how many bucks do you make? But conversion means how do you increase your presence in the conversation? So the social web has three P's. That's the marketing. It's perceiving, listening in, participating, engaging, and to project back out. This is, looking at the time here, what it's exactly 35 now. I've been talking for 29 minutes. That leaves us 1 minute for questions. So you better be fast and think about what you are asking now. Also, I'm here until Wednesday, and in the spirit of the privacy conversation I had on the stage yesterday with Dave Holtzman, the former spy, I managed to get myself a number here in Sweden where I didn't have to show anybody my ID for. So make sure you don't tell me what that number is linked to me. But otherwise, you can always call me on a US number, or my current contact information also is also on the web on viking.com. What questions, ladies and gentlemen, would you have which I might be able to answer?
One question, and what Ulla said previously, do you see a generation gap that this is sort of below 35, 40, and that it happens and grows up, or that would you think that the 50 plus would be engaged also, or very slowly?
Okay. So I actually, while I was here, since I don't speak Swedish, I'm not quite sure what Ola said.
Okay. But I think you have heard him before.
I was deeply impressed by hearing Ola speak, because I've never heard Ola speak before. I've been drinking with him, and I know he's really good at drinking, but I haven't heard him speak. So basically, if you ask me about the generation gap.
Is there a generation gap?
Yes. So the way I look at this question is, we have to really do some deep thinking here. What are the invariants? What are the things which remain constants over time? And I gave you one example, the field of behavior economics, which studies how people make decisions. And those are often heuristics which we actually, you know, built to cope with the world as hunters and gatherers thousands and thousands of years ago. Those don't change quickly. On the other hand, here's an open question which I didn't think anybody knows the answer to. In this world of continuous partial attention, as we call it, where we have lots of things happening in parallel, I'm actually really amazed that despite being in Scandinavia here, you don't have each two mobile phones where you text while I'm talking and, you know, talk on the third one. In this world of continuous partial attention, by the way, thank you for giving me your attention here. In this world, do people just fool themselves on thinking they're productive, or actually are they more productive? I don't think we know the answer. In this world where, I don't know, Ola, I think, has 7,400 friends, close friends on Facebook. Well, I have to say, I'm very lucky that, you know, whenever I'm here, actually, I see him. I'm not sure about the other 7,309. So what does it mean to be somebody's friend? So I think we just see the cusp, the very beginning, rather, of a development. For instance, actually, what does it mean to be somebody's friend? I think it really depends. So, like Esther Dyson and I, we love to go swimming together. So, we have done that in three continents. So, I mean, she's a great friend to go swimming with. She's a wonderful person of conversations with. Ola, I have never been swimming with. I'm not sure, does Ola know how to swim? I wouldn't know. So, I wouldn't even know how to ask him. He almost can fly, right. There are often asymmetries. So, let's say, here's this belief. I told you about predictions being important because they're about the future. And like, why is Google 200 billion market cap? Because you tell Google your interests, your intentions. You share your intentions with Google. You say, hairdresser, Stockholm, because I really need to go to hairdresser. If anybody of you knows a good hairdresser, please let me know after the talk. That's sort of the social way of finding out, you know? So I'm serious about this. I had this photo session. I was really embarrassed that I didn't have time to go to hairdresser. So hairdresser, so I express my attention to Google. And so Google actually can feed with e-business back to that intention. Much deeper than the hairdresser example, Google launched 14 months ago in the United States, not yet in Europe, Google Checkout. So now from the cradle to the grave, from the beginning of life to death, from the cradle to the grave, Google knows what I'm interested in and what I eventually buy. Amazon, poor Amazon. Amazon only knows what I do at Amazon's website. So sad. In contrast, Google, 80-something percent of people in Sweden use Google. Google knows from your first inkling that you might be interested in buying a camera to your eventual purchase, all the queries you have done. That's very powerful. So, back to your question. So I first think that the world is changing much faster than any generation gap can actually characterize it. So I'm 48, and I have to say, I think I'm reasonably literate on computers. I mean, I know how to use a mobile phone, for instance, and know how to use a computer. Sometimes even I manage to pick up, you know, Wi-Fi, if I'm lucky, if the stars are right, you know, if it's open or stuff like this. So I don't know. What I think is different is that the modalities change, that the notion of getting a response, for instance, to a communication, that seems to be an old man's notion. So I think when I send something to the students, that notion that I'm thinking about, maybe I'm getting a response, I think forget about this. So they're just used to short messages into IM, and that's more that you live in a lake. It's like the monkeys in the zoo, you know, that they poke each other. They make sure that there are no lice in their heart, in their hair and stuff like this. Back to the hairdresser, I know. And that's a very different notion of where you want to just make sure that you are not the only member of your species around, but you need those, in Ola's case, 7,400, I think, close friends on Facebook. So it's not a generation gap, I think. Some degree it is because they grow up differently, they socialize differently, but I think we all get very much moved around that way. Women between, for instance, 45 and 60 or 65 actually are very active on the web. Yeah.
I'll take a final question. I'll take a minute of my own time later on.
All right.
Speaking a little faster though. What do you see? We talked about that last time I was here. You and Ola talked a lot about the social network and like the web is kind of exploding, that's getting bigger and bigger. From an e-commerce side, how do you get the people into your stores in the future? Now, Google is one of the strongest ones today where you find the new income or visitors on your site. How do you see that happening in the future? Google's going to be the one still? Or?
No, I think Google is, in that respect, pretty much a thing of the past. Google, with its attempt to, you know, try to form an alliance against MySpace, Facebook, and other, you know, big companies against Facebook, is, you know, a typical reaction of the person who's lost the game. You know, like, if you're not doing well in school, then you go to your mom and say, you know, I got a bad grade, but my friends also got a bad grade, so it's not that bad after all. I think that's how I view it there. It clearly is that the social networks that are part, as I said, from the me business, we move to the we business. Google is in the first category there. The we business, that's where it's happening. So rather than trying to create a social network associated with a company, people already have their social network. And the key thing about Facebook is that Facebook reflects the behavior patterns people have in real life on Facebook. So Facebook is great in supporting real life interactions. And that is where the power lies. This addiction creating features, this personal news feed you have, that, well, when you log in, it shows you what your friends did. So and so. Here's a story, for instance, Valivag, a guy in San Francisco who writes a blog, told me about. There's a woman called Marissa Meyer at Google. And Marissa went to Stanford, and there was a Stanford reunion where lots of people get together. So at Marissa's Facebook blog, it said she wants to have random play. She's interested in random play. So Owen Thomas suggested that, you know, if there are any people who want to have random play with Marissa, that seems to be a good place to hang out. So then when we talked about it like a week afterwards, we both realized, Owen Thomas and I, that she has no way to ever take that off. Because the moment she takes it off, with, you know, thousands of people having, you know, getting alerts, and even one of them only says, Marissa is no longer interested in random play. Of course, Valley would congratulate her that she finally, you know, got laid. And so it's very interesting to see what's public, what's private there. And that feature, that these little updates you do, I actually made sure I first removed the feature of notifying any third. And then I added the feature again when I realized that and, you know, how you want to change things. It's very, very difficult to actually not have that temptation to know what's been happening to my friends now. You know, ultimately, there was a funny period which started with a guy called Gutenberg. Gutenberg sounds like a Swedish town, but is not. It was a German guy in Mainz who invented the printing press. And during that period, going up to the first generation of e-business, there was this notion that you print stuff and it's fixed. You know, for instance, prices. Do you know that you got catalogs and their prices printed in catalogs? Like in traditional business where they send out catalogs, and those prices absurdly are good for like 5 months, 6 months, 7 months. That's the way, which was just a fiction of the late last millennium. Because of course things depend. Hey, you know, if I go to the market in Bangkok, then I probably pay five times as much, even though it speaks on Thai, compared to the Thai person. But I might get the fresher, you know, beans compared to the Thai person. So all of this negotiation. So when I say conversational marketing, actually, that's just an indication of a much bigger picture. Markets as conversation was one of the Knutrain Manifesto statements 8 years ago, 9 years ago. And that belief that there are conversations certainly goes beyond individual generations. And I think if you think about it this way, how can we introduce genuine conversations, negotiations? How can we enable bi-directional communication so people, customers, can contribute content? Customers can help other customers. How can we have in the next generation platform the feature that if I buy myself a really cool voice recorder here, 24-bit stereo, I mean, that thing is cool, better than CD quality. I mean, I would be happy to tell anybody who wants to hear about it, even if you don't want to hear about it, about this cool Eddie Roll thing, you know, or my mobile phone or whatever it is. So I think that is where things are going, that we want to have channels so people can help other people. All right. Thank you very much. Okay.
Great pleasure having you here. Appreciate the time.